Well, here we are then. Only 5 more sleeps until the big day. And, well, I wonder how your preparations are going. I hope they're going okay. There's always so much to do, always too much to do, isn't there? And just not really enough time to fit it all in. And, you know, with the lists and lists of activity that we've got planned, food to prepare, presents to wrap, not forgetting the cards and the decorations, and only 5 sleeps, where will we ever find the time to get it all done? But, you know, year after year, we just about get there in the end, don't we? At least we do in our house. We go to great lengths preparing a beautiful meal, agonising over gifts and presents, getting everything ready for the great big day. I wonder if you saw on the TV this week, Eat Well for Less. There was a family on there who'd been doing a bit of Christmas shopping themselves, getting the food all ready. They were a couple called Richard and Angela Goff, and they'd, between them, managed to spend an incredible £1,400 in Sainsbury's, can you believe it, buying their Christmas food and drink. And Greg and Chris, the presenters, they set to and slashed a massive, I think, £500 off the family budget. Still sounds like quite an expensive meal, if you ask me, but there we go. I wonder where you find yourself this Christmas. Let me sort of present something to you. Imagine there's a sliding scale. At one end of the scale, we've got the ding-dong merrily on high kind of people. You know, the sort, the kind of people that are so keen, so excited about the big day, that they're almost fit to burst. I'm sure you know people like that, you know, lights all over the house. They've had the Christmas jumper on for weeks and weeks already. And, well, that's one end of the scale, the ding-dong merrily kind of people. And, well, at the other end, we've got in the bleak midwinter, okay? The frosty winds, the dark nights, the dark and the gloom, the kind of people that wish, well, really, Christmas would just leave them alone for a little bit longer. You know, give us a bit of peace and a bit of quiet, a bit of time just to enjoy, well, enjoy the gloom and the solitude of a quiet night in. It's way too much partying, if you ask me. So that's at the other end of the scale. Again, I'm sure we all know people like that as well, don't we, where it's all rather too much effort to enjoy ourselves, and before long it'll all be over, and phew, we can get back to normal. So that's the other end, the Christmas gloom in the bleak midwinter. I wonder where you find yourself on that scale. I guess most of us find ourselves somewhere in between. And maybe you sort of slide up and down a bit, depending on your mood and on what day it is. You know, the Bible tells us really about the background to the first Christmas. It was a much more down this end, in the gloom and the darkness, than it was ding-dong merrily. A bit later in Isaiah's book, we read about the fact that darkness is covering the earth, and thick darkness the people. It reads a bit like a wet, dreary day, sort of trudging round in the drizzle of Manchester, doesn't it? Definitely more gloom than gladness going on. I wonder what you're most looking forward to this Christmas time. My lovely wife Amanda, she's already at it with the Radio Times and the highlighter pen, you know, madly scribbling out things that she's going to record on the box. A bit of Doctor Who and Strictly on Christmas Day, and The Queen, of course. The big film on Boxing Day, that'll be there. I don't know about you, maybe you're excited about something else. Maybe you're excited about a particular gift that you've asked Santa for this year. Maybe for you it's just the pleasure of getting your family together for food and festivities. But, you know, for some this Christmas, turkey and tinsel, it doesn't even feature on their wish list. Over these last few months, I've got to know a guy. He's a homeless guy. He's slept rough up in our churchyard a few times, and he's come to the vicarage more than a few times now asking for help. I give him, you know, a hot drink, a bit of food, spend some time with him, point him towards some other help that he might be able to get. Well, I know what he wants for Christmas. It's not really turkey and tinsel. He's facing the gloom of another night with nowhere to live. We've heard a lot these last few days, haven't we, about the sad demise of the workforce of the Killingley Colliery. The mining that's stopped there, the pit that's closed down now for good. See, I know what the guys there will want for Christmas. because they're facing the gloom of unemployment, financial hardship. And I think about the many local families who it's been the privilege for us to officiate at their funeral services this year, and those who've lost a loved one. You know, I know what those people would love for Christmas. That's just a little bit more time with their nearest and dearest, facing the darkness and gloom of loss and separation. You see, despite the bright lights and the decorations and all the things we get out, even today, even for our village, the background to Christmas for some, at least for some, is more gloom than gladness. Now here's the thing, and here's the question that Isaiah is going to help us with this evening. How are we to make sense of the darkness? You know, we know it's there. We sometimes experience it ourselves. We know things aren't how they should be. Whether they're far away or right close to home, darkness and gloom are sometimes, and sometimes quite often, part of our life's experience, never too far away. Maybe that's even where you find yourself this Christmas time. Even when you want to be a bit of ding-dong merrily, the reality for you is that Christmas 2015, it's pretty bleak. It's going to be a bleak midwinter. Well, what I want to share with you this evening is God's answer to people who find themselves in dark and gloomy places, in a dark and gloomy world. This part of the Bible, Isaiah chapter 9, it was written some 700 years before the baby Jesus came along. That's a very long time ago, 2,700 years or so. And that makes it a prophecy written by a prophet, this guy called Isaiah. We're looking at just a few verses from chapter 9. It's on page 6 in your booklets if you want to follow along as we look at it together. Now, in this part of the book, Isaiah is speaking to a very stressed out people of God. You can see that there in verse 1. There are people, he says, in distress. See where he writes, "Nevertheless, there will be no more gloom for those who were in distress." So why all the gloom? Why the distress in Isaiah's day? Well, the people of God are really, really worried. They're scared of what's happening to them. They find themselves in a really bad place. And the reason for that is because looming on the horizon is two big problems. In chapter 8, the bit just before this part, we can see they're stressed out because they have sinned against God, and God is not pleased with them. They've ignored his ways. They have failed to worship him as they should have done. And now here in chapter 9, they're stressed out because of Assyria, in the shape and form of the Assyrian army. That army is bearing down upon Jerusalem, coming down from the north, ready and poised to attack. And you see, put those two things together, and it's very dark and gloomy in Jerusalem. It's hanging over the city. And this was their world. This was their everyday experience. And it's tough, isn't it? Day after day, it must have been for them. I guess some of us may have known burdens like that. You know, perhaps a serious illness in the family, a time of unemployment or financial hardship, or even the sadness of bereavement. Burdens and trials that we wake up with every morning. And no matter how hard we try, they just won't go away. They don't seem to go away by themselves. Well, back in Isaiah, that's why they were in this particular distress. Day after day, every day was the same. They woke up to the twin realities of the problem of their sin and the problem of death hanging over them as a people. Will it be today, they thought, that God calls time on their rebellion? Will it be today that he sends the Assyrians to march into the city? See, that was the burden they were bearing day after day. And wherever they looked, whichever way they turned, there really didn't seem to be an obvious way back out of the gloom. But then, amazingly, God did something. At least he promised something. He made a promise to them that would turn their world upside down, that would completely transform their situation. It would indeed turn out to be good news for everyone. And because into the darkness and the gloom, God shone a very bright light. Look with me at verse 2 where it says, "The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of the shadow of death, a light has dawned. In these few words, God is promising the one thing these guys want more than anything else, and that is a way out of their present darkness. The way, an end to the darkness for people in distress. You probably remember just a couple of weeks ago, in fact it was the weekend of our Christmas market, I think, that Storm Desmond came blowing through and took its toll on the British Isles. Indeed, Storm Desmond took its toll on the church roof, would you believe it, with the gale force winds and the torrential rain. It caused widespread power cuts over the north of England, and two places in particular were really badly affected, weren't they, by the flooding. That was Lancashire and Cumbria. Now, the homes in Lancashire, they fared much better, really. They were off the grid with a power cut for about 2 days before the supplies were restored. But think on for the poor folks up in Cumbria, because it wasn't 4 days, it was 9 days that their power cut lasted. 9 days cut off in the cold and the wet and the dark. Can you imagine that? No telly, no kettle. No lights, no cooker, not even any broadband. How on earth are we going to cope with 9 days without the internet? Awful. Waiting and waiting. There they were, day after day, constantly asking themselves, will it be today that the lights come back on? Of course, light is always the way out of darkness, isn't it? Whether we're kind of lighting a candle or flicking on a switch, as soon as light shines in a dark place, the darkness is pushed back. And we can see once again. Well, what we have here is God promising a great light to shine into the very great darkness of sin and death. And not just to push the darkness back for a while or hold it at bay. This is a light so bright and so powerful as to completely destroy it. The darkness will be no more when this light shines in the world. We'll read this a little later from John chapter 1. We read, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. See, this, my friends, is the really good news for all of us at Christmas, capable of turning even the bleakest of bleak midwinters into the cause for some festive joy. Because as we read on in Isaiah, we discover that God's light, he's not sending a megawatt light bulb, rather he's sending a person. He's sending a tiny baby born of the Virgin Mary. In that manger in Bethlehem, God's light came into the world. He's talking about Jesus. He's predicting 700 years before it came along that Jesus would come into the world. God's light from beyond who showed up here on earth. Here is what Isaiah says in verse 6. He says, for to us a child is born. To us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. See, in Jesus, in this tiny baby, comes God's answer to the darkness of sin and the darkness of death. And because here in the manger is the baby who will give up his own light for us as he dies in the darkness for our sins on that first Good Friday. And here is the baby whose light will overpower the darkness of death that first Easter morning as God brought him back out of the grave alive again, bursting up and out and back into life. Jesus is God's answer to the darkness and the way out of the gloom. So wherever we find ourselves this Christmas, we all need this child. We all need this light, because without him, we'll be left hanging about in the dark. Like the people in Jerusalem, if we're not following Jesus, then we're living under the gloom and the shadow of sin and of death. This evening I want to offer you a couple of things, a couple of different ways of thinking about these things. First thing is this little book. It's called Four Kinds of Christmas, and it costs just £1. There are a whole pile of them down at the back. It's only a short book. It's about 40 pages or so. And Four Kinds of Christmas, it's a book which tackles these things head on. It asks us a very simple question. How will I respond to the darkness all around me? The writer, he offers some different suggestions of how people in the world have answered this question. The first one, some say, well, we'd better get used to the dark. It's dark everywhere. Let's just get used to it. Others try and manufacture their own light to make it so it's not quite so gloomy. For some, it's just a game of make-believe, pretending that it's not really dark if we put a few lights on around the place. Well, this little book explains much more than I have about how Jesus came as God's light, sent by his Father to overcome the double darkness of sin and death. I'd love you to take a copy. Just pop the money in the little jar at the back. If you've not got a pound on you, that's absolutely fine. Just take one anyway. We'd love you to have it from us this Christmas time. The second thing I'd like to offer you this Christmas is a chance to think about Jesus in a small group that I'll be running here at St. Thomas's just after Christmas. It's called One Life, and you can read about it on these little postcards. There's one in your booklet. It was given to you on the way in this evening. This group is a chance to think about the life of Jesus, about why he came, and what it means to follow him. And we're going to begin our group, as we did last time, with a taster evening. That's just one evening where we'll meet together at 7 o'clock on Wednesday the 13th of January. We'll meet together, we'll have a meal, and then we'll do the first session of the group. So please, if that might be helpful for you, do have a serious think about coming along. We've got a sheet at the back. You could sign up tonight and let us know that you might be coming along. That would be great. I take this as my personal invitation. I'd love to see you there and hope you can come along. And finally, if this would be helpful for you, we've got some paperback copies of the New Testament of the Bible. Again, they're just a quid, just a pound. Please pick one up from the back on your way out tonight, and you could start and read a little bit more about this Christmas story and this man that calls himself Jesus. Pick up Mark or Luke and read a little bit every day, and you'll discover there the story, the incredible story of what Jesus did and said, the way he lived and the way he died. You see, one thing that Isaiah has shown us, like it or not, the darkness of sin and the darkness of death is very real, and they hang over all of us. But the Bible has an answer for these things, a very plain and simple and straightforward answer. And it's all about following Jesus. Because if we follow him, there is no more gloom. The light of Jesus is a very great light. This Christmas would be a great time, a really good time, perhaps even for the first time, to give these things a really serious thought. The way out of the darkness and to walk in the light of the Lord Jesus. Read the book, join the group, take a Bible. Please let us help you think about these things a little bit more this Christmas time. And let his light shine in your life. Come home to your Father this Christmas time. Because the people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of the shadow of death, a light has dawned.